So we're here today now on the people of the state of Colorado versus Gary Graves. Could I have the oath of appearance, please? Munier? All right, thank you. And for the respondent, please.
Allison Rutledge.
Ms. Rutledge, thank you. Council, this is set for an hour. Each side has a half an hour. Mr. Munier, you'll have to keep track of your own time if you wish to reserve something for a rebuttal. And whenever you're set, you can go ahead, sir.
Good morning. May it please the court. Again, my name is Cameron Munier. I represent the petitioner in this case, the people of the state of Colorado. Now, we're here today because the petitioner is asking this court to reverse the order of the district court, which, sitting in its appellate capacity, affirmed an order of the county court ruling subsection 1D of Colorado Revised Statute 187301 unconstitutional. Now, Your Honors, the facts in this case are simple and undisputed. In the trial court, the defendant, Mr. Graves, respondent here, did adopt the facts as alleged in the police report as true for the purposes of this motion to dismiss. Again, the facts are simple. Mr. Graves was in a movie theater watching a pornographic homosexual film. There was an undercover officer also in the theater who observed Mr. Graves reach over to the man sitting next to him and rub that man's penis over that man's pants. Mr. Graves was originally charged under subsection 1C of the Public Indecency Statute. The people later moved to amend that to subsection 1D, which is what we're here to address today. And that subsection prohibits the lewd fondle or caress of the body of another person if done in a public place or where the conduct may be reasonably be expected to be viewed by members of the public. Now, defendant below did file his motion to dismiss on two separate grounds, one on overbreadth and one on vagueness under due process. After hearing, the county court found the statute to be vague and dismissed the charge. The county court did not reach the overbreadth issue. The people appealed that finding to the district court in its appellate capacity, and the district court affirmed not only on vagueness, but it did also state it was finding the statute overbroad as well. Now, in the response brief, one of the primary issues I think the court should address is defendant argues that the statute prohibits essentially two things, a lewd fondle and then any caress. Now, given the context of the public indecency statute as a whole, for the court to conclude that would lead to an absurd result in this case. Now, the public indecency statute, the other subsections, to indicate that the statute is aimed at preventing sexual conduct. As Your Honors know, there's a subsection that prohibits sexual intercourse in public, one that prohibits lewd exposure of genitals or intimate parts, things of that nature. So the legislature didn't have to specifically say lewd fondle and lewd caress, but based on the context and the construction of that subsection, this statute does prohibit lewd fondling and lewd caressing. Now, the order in the district court was somewhat unusual in that it analyzed vagueness clearly. Overbreadth was kind of mixed in with its vagueness analysis, but it did conclude at the end of its order that the statute was overbroad as well. And as Your Honor to know, vagueness and overbreadth are two distinct legal terms of art with their own distinct analysis. Vagueness arises under the Due Process Clause, while finding the statute overbroad arises under the First Amendment. The courts have stated that overbreadth is a strong medicine and should only be used as a last resort. And it is clear that finding the statute overbroad relates to it encompassing First Amendment protected activities and expression. The Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court, Virginia v. Hicks, 539 U.S. 113, 2003, did state that an overbreadth challenge will rarely succeed when a law is not specifically addressed to speech or conduct necessarily associated with speech. such as picketing or demonstrating. Now, in this case, Your Honors, the public indecency subsection 1D of the Fondle of Caress is not aimed at all or addressed at speech or any kind of conduct associated with speech, such as picketing or things of that nature. The county court didn't find anything of that nature, as it didn't even address the issue. And the district court as well did not consider this First Amendment prong of this overbreadth test in its analysis. It appears rather that the district court was concerned that the statute was overbroad because it could outlaw, I guess what I would call, innocuous conduct. And as an example of it, listed public displays of affection or breastfeeding, things of that nature. Whether or not the legislature could prohibit things like that is not a question that's before this court today. But what is clear is that these things don't fall under the overbreadth analysis itself, as they are not expressive conduct under the First Amendment. Now, in the trial court below, the defendant did raise, argue that perhaps the statute would cover plays, movies, things of that nature. And again, that wasn't addressed by either of the courts below, but even assuming that's true, to find a statute substantially overbroad, or I guess what I would call facially overbroad, a claimant has to show by the text of the law and by fact that it sweeps a substantial amount of protected activity in general and in relation to its legitimate sweep. And again, here there was no evidence of that presented in this record at all. Neither of the courts below considered this in its analysis. There was no showing that any First Amendment protected activities had been suppressed or could be suppressed by the statute.
So the chief judge went off on a lark here? I mean, is that basically what happened? When reviewing the county court?
The order is somewhat unclear. The fact that he uses the term overbroad, like I said, is a distinct factual or a distinct legal term of art in its own analysis. And as his order shows, he was concerned with it sweeping broadly as to include what he would consider innocuous or innocent.
But you're saying that wasn't raised in the county court, that overbreadth challenge? I mean,
it was raised by motion, but the county court itself did not reach that issue.
Did not reach it.
Yes. So, yes, it is my position the district court went further than the county court did in its order.
I'm not sure I'm understanding. So are you suggesting that it couldn't do that, or simply that it mislabeled a vagueness challenge overbreadth?
I'm suggesting the district court shouldn't have ruled on overbreadth because it wasn't addressed by the county court below. But now that it has, it is properly before this court. And I guess what I would say is, it may have mislabeled vagueness as overbreadth, but it did specifically talk about how the statute could sweep in things like public displays of affection and breastfeeding, and I think it just applied the wrong standard in this case.
So if I can just follow up. So to the extent that it addressed overbreadth, you're saying it mistakenly applied it found something overbroad that didn't meet the test for overbreadth. Is that right?
That's correct, Justice Coates.
Okay.
Now, even if a statute isn't substantially overbroad and void on its face, it can still be found overbroad as applied. And again, neither of the courts below reached this issue, but we're here now on undisputed facts. This argument was raised below by the defendant. And because the facts are undisputed, and this is essentially now a question of law, I do think this court can address whether the statute was overbroad as applied in this case, rather than remanding based on undisputed facts for the lower court to make the determination of law.
This is a public movie theater. Anybody can walk in there?
Yes. You do have to pay to go inside, but it is a public movie theater.
But it's not something inside a store?
No, it's not inside a store. The record is not entirely clear, the location and the layout of this theater, but we do know it is a public movie theater, which the county court did address in its record below.
Could I ask you one more question?
Yes.
Did you say overbreadth as applied?
Yes. Overbroad, the statute can also be found overbroad as applied to a defendant's particular conduct. And our position here is that that test was also not met as well, because, as I explained to the court, the facts here are that the defendant was rubbing the penis of another man over that man's pants in a movie theater. It can't be said that this is any kind of expressive conduct under the First Amendment in any sense of that. So this statute is not overbroad as applied because it's not, the defendant's not being punished for expressing any kind of protected First Amendment expression in this case. Now, the courts below both also found subsection 1D vague. Now, it's true that the statute is not written in precise language, as precise as it could have been. But as the courts have stated before, and as this court has stated, the legislature doesn't have to draft a statute with absolute precision, because this allows the legislature to kind of contemplate different types of activities without having to specify exactly what is prohibited. So long as the statute sets forth a standard of conduct and is one where a person of normal intelligence would not necessarily have to guess as to what the statute prohibits. Now, the district court below, its opposition did make several errors in its order in finding that this statute was vague. The district court first determined that looking at the dictionary to define the plain meaning of terms in the statute, I believe the words used were antiquated and out of touch with contemporary society. But as this court does in interpreting a statute, it first looks at the plain language of the words. And in doing so, this court has often looked to recognize dictionaries in determining the plain meaning. Now, when looking at the plain meaning and determining whether a statute is vague, this court will also look at the context of the statute as a whole to see if that sheds light on what the statute intends to prohibit. Now, in this case, as I've explained, the public indecency statute as a whole is aimed at sexualized behavior that occurs in public, and that's what it seeks to prohibit. Now, when you take that with the plain meaning of the words, in the statute, lewd, fondle, caress, and body of another person, as set forth in the opening brief, it's the people's position that this does give a person of reasonable intelligence adequate notice of what is prohibited. And even if it doesn't specifically on its face, as the court knows, it does have a duty to construe a statute in a constitutional manner whenever possible.
Are you saying this intent element of 1C has got to be read into 1D? We're talking about a lewd fondling or caress of the body of another person, right? Isn't that the offense alleged here?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so why does the intent in C, a lewd exposure done with intent to arouse or to satisfy a sexual desire of another person, why does that go over to D? Why isn't D independent?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not specifically arguing that the intent element from C carries over into D. What I'm arguing is that the plain language of the words and their definitions gives a person a reasonable notice of what is prohibited.
In other words, lewd is, everybody understands what lewd is?
I'm sorry?
Everybody understands what the word lewd means, L-E-W-D?
Yes, when you look at the definition of lewd, it does pertain specifically to sexual behavior, inciting sexual appetites, things of that nature, and things that are also indecent. And as the Massachusetts Supreme Court said in the Commonwealth v. Kenny case, persons of reasonable intelligence would know what those words mean. That it is a sexualized touching that can be considered indecent and offensive. Now, there were
I'm sorry, Council, could I interrupt you for a moment? You said the definition of lewd. Are you just referring to a dictionary definition?
Yes.
I wasn't finding any statutory definition of that word.
Correct, Your Honor. There is no statutory definition of lewd, fondle, caress, or body within the statute or that title as a whole. But as I stated earlier, in interpreting the plain language of words, this court has often looked at recognized dictionaries, which is what the people have done in this case.
May I ask actually a follow-up question? This takes us one step back, I guess. In the overbirth context, it's clear that a person whose conduct may not be on sort of the outer edges is still allowed to raise a facial overbirth claim,
right,
because it might sweep in other protected conduct. But in the vagueness context, haven't we said that if the person challenging the particular statute as vague, it's very obvious that their conduct does come within the any reasonable definition, that they are sort of precluded from even raising a vagueness challenge?
Yes, this court has said that in the past, but I did decide to address that today because I believe it was in City of Colorado Springs v. Blanche, 761 P. Second 212, this court in 1988. A challenge was raised to a Colorado Springs a law that prohibited religious activities within a residential zone. The party in that case was holding essentially worship services inside the residence. The court did go on, though, to address both the facial vagueness issue as well as the applied issue, even though it found that even as applied, the statute wasn't vague because these people were clearly holding church activities or religious activities within this residential zone. So while the court has said that based on Blanche, it seems that the court may consider that in some circumstances anyway, so that's why I've chosen to address that today.
Counsel, can I just follow up, though? You would not just, I guess, are you arguing to the limited extent, at least, that the conduct here did fall within the core definition of lewd? Can you help me? You flesh that out?
Yes, Justice Ide. We are arguing that the core of a lewd, fondle, or caress, certainly, whatever it includes, does include the rubbing of another man's penis, whether it's over that person's pants or not, as long as it's done in a public place, which is what is alleged to have happened in this case. So based on the language of the statute, the plain meaning of the words, it is our position that this does fall within what you say is the core of what this statute is intending to prohibit.
Thank you.
And, Your Honors, I would just like to address several of the cases cited by defendant in their response brief in which statutes of similar language have been found vague and how those are distinguishable from this case. For example, in the District of Columbia v. Walters, 319A2D332, District of Columbia Court of Appeals from 1974, the statute there prohibited a person from committing any lewd, obscene, or indecent act in the District of Columbia. In finding the statute vague, that court did contrast it with other statutes that impair the word lewd or obscene or indecent with other words that gave it context. And as examples, they gave statutes that impair lewd with exposure or statutes that impair lewd with touching of a minor. Their main contention with the statute, or one of them was, is that the word act is in and of itself very broad and didn't give people notice of what kind of lewd act they could be punished for. Here in this case, we do have a limiting word, two of them actually, fondle or caress, touching, which a person of reasonable intelligence could understand. So it's distinguishable in that sense. In State v. Crater, Louisiana Supreme Court, 1980, 388, SO 2D 802, that law prohibited someone from maintaining a place of public entertainment which permitted lewd dancing. Now, they found that lewd did not have a clear meaning, but what they also focused on was that this statute specifically targeted dancing, which was a protected form of expression. And they feared that legitimate forms of First Amendment expression could be suppressed because of this. And as the courts have said, when First Amendment protections are implicated, the vagueness test becomes a lot more strict than for statutes that aren't targeting or covering First Amendment protection. And here, again, in this case, we're dealing with a statute that is prohibiting pure conduct, lewd fondling or caressing. And again, it's not targeting any kind of First Amendment protected expression. And Your Honors, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
You certainly may do so. Ms. Rutenberg?
Good morning. I'm Allison Ruttenberg, counsel for Mr. Graves. I'd like to first address some of the undisputed facts here. I think it's important to note that, yes, this was a public movie theater, but it was a public movie theater where children weren't allowed to be present. And I think that that's an important distinction, that there were no children present, the children couldn't be present. This was the type of place where children weren't allowed. It's also true that pornographic movies were being showed, but there's no implication or suggestion that the content of the movie itself was somehow child pornographic or otherwise illegal. It was just an otherwise legal X-rated film being shown in a theater where children are excluded. You know, the core issue in this case is whether the term, quote unquote, lewd is vague, and whether people of ordinary intelligence knows what that means and knows what lewd fondling or lewd caressing means and knows when conduct crosses a line from okay to criminal in public.
Well, this would fit, right?
Excuse me?
This would fit a definition of lewd, wouldn't it? This act would fit in public, would fit any definition of lewd, right? That was commonly understood.
I'm not sure I agree with that, Your Honor.
Well, tell me why.
If this act is lewd per se because one man was touching another man's penis over his clothes, then what I see in the hallways of my son's high school every day, which is two kids pressed up against each other with their crotches pressed against each other while kissing, and even one of them is pushing against the buttocks of the other person to make that contact more intense, that would also be lewd. And nobody really considers that to be lewd or criminal conduct.
Somehow, well, sure, that's just teenagers.
Well, but that's the core of the problem here. What, you know, what touching of the genitals over the clothes crosses the line in this day and age, in the year 2014, I realize in the year 1914 it might be different.
Are you arguing for the overbreadth now, or are we looking at as applied? I mean, I don't, maybe I jumped in here too soon.
Well, and I was going to mention in a minute that the reason why those two concepts are intertwined is the reason why the statute is overbroad is because the term lewd is vague. So the statute is overbroad as sweeping in conduct such as the kids at the high school kissing and pressing up against each other with their crotches pressed into against each other. So the intent is clearly to have genital to genital conduct through their clothes while kissing, and you know, while parents might not like that, teachers might not like that, that's not considered criminal conduct, then you know, how does the line get crossed into this type of criminal conduct, which one person using a hand rather than pressing up against each other, that somehow becomes criminal when we've got nothing else going on, such as an indecent exposure. I mean, you know, there's no question here that penises were exposed in public or that there were erections in public or there was actual masturbation going on with erections. I mean, it was what the police officer literally said was he saw my client place his hands over the crotch area of another man and stroke it. That's all. That's very similar to what I'm describing of these teenagers pressing up against each other with the intent to have genital-to-genital conduct through their clothes, and that's not considered lewd or lascivious or criminal conduct. So I'm not sure we can say that this conduct as described by the police is lewd per se under any definition of lewd. We have to have a better definition of lewd, and that's the problem.
So your suggestion is the legislature should do what to make this clear?
Well, they need to define what touching they're talking about that crosses the line into lewd. What else needs to be present? Do we need an intent for sexual gratification between one or both parties, and how do we determine that? Is it enough that one person is simply touching the other person with the intent to cause an erection? Is it enough that the other person has an erection? Does there need to also be some sort of indecent exposure? None of that is defined in the statute.
Ms. Rettenberg, can I?
Sure.
Please.
Okay. Good morning. When you make the comparison to the high school students, are you making that comparison for the purposes of vagueness or overbreadth? Because I kind of feel that's what the district court did, was just sort of conflated and, you know, dropped all those terms. But they're really distinct challenges, correct?
Correct.
So in terms of understanding your comparison, is that for overbreadth or is that for vagueness?
Well, and I'll go back to what I said before. The reason why the statute is overbroad is because the term lewd is vague. And so because we have no definition of lewd, then, you know, if you're going to use the definition of lewd as touching the genitals of another through their clothes, then you have the problem that causes the statute to become overbroad in the situation such as the two teenagers or the situation here, where we've got conduct that other people might not consider to be offensive or criminal simply because there's nothing overtly sexual happening in front of them. There's no visible ejaculation or erections. There's no indecent exposure. There's no obvious masturbation. Even though when we see the two kids with their crotches pressed against each other kissing in the hallway, clearly we're assuming that one or both of them is getting some sort of a sexual charge out of that. But if that were criminal, I don't think there'd be a lot of students left at my high school, because that's what these kids engage in, and that's not considered to be lewd or criminal conduct. I mean, that's the problem with the statute, that the lack of a definition causes the statute then to become overbroad. Which is why I think that the district court kind of mishmashed the two concepts together, and why we have that problem.
Do you disagree then with Mr. Meunier that the overbreath, really, we should look at the nature of the expression in terms of First Amendment issues?
This is not a First Amendment case.
Right.
I mean, I'm not claiming that Mr. Graves was engaged in any type of First Amendment expressive conduct. But even such, that doesn't mean that there's not an overbreath problem.
What does overbreath apply to, then, in your mind?
Well, the reason why the statute is overbroad is because it sweeps, because the word lewd is vague, then it sweeps into the criminality of the statute, all this other conduct, such as the teenagers in the hallways, that we normally, at least in the year 2014, don't consider to be criminal.
I guess I wanted to, in a sort of more formal way, figure out exactly how we're applying the term overbreath. You would not limit overbreath to sweeping protected First Amendment conduct.
No.
But then sweeping what kind of protected conduct, or protected conduct at all? What amounts to an overbreath claim?
Well, maybe saying protected conduct is the wrong term. What I mean is it's protecting non-criminal conduct in its sweep, or the type of conduct that our society in the year 2014, or I guess this was a 2011 case, the conduct in this century in the United States we don't consider to be criminal conduct. That's why it's overbroad. And I don't think it's necessary that conduct be First Amendment expressive.
I guess kind of where I was going with that is overbreath is a constitutional limitation on what the legislature could proscribe as criminal. And when you say we don't consider it criminal, I guess what you mean is it hasn't been proscribed by the legislature as criminal. But isn't the question for overbreath, could they do that? And if they couldn't, why? What kind of conduct is constitutionally protected such that they couldn't criminalize it? Now, and the reason I ask about First Amendment is I think some of our cases seem to go both ways. Some, and United States Supreme Court cases, sometimes seem to imply overbreath, that term could only apply to protected First Amendment conduct. Sometimes it seems broader, and we use terms like fundamental constitutional rights. But what kind of conduct here, however you describe it, is the protected conduct? Is it constitutionally protected?
Well, I mean, that's part of the problem here. I mean, there's no fundamental constitutional right to kiss in public, I guess. But when you see it on TV or in film, then we do have First Amendment conduct. And the reason why why it would be dangerous and problematic for the legislature to say, well, to get around this problem, we're just going to make all of this conduct illegal and we're going to specifically spell this out in the statute. So now the teenagers in the high school can be charged under the statute as well. Well, then down that slippery slope, then the next issue is going to be, well, okay, it's criminal for the two kids in high school to do that, but it's okay for them to watch it on TV that night because that is First Amendment expressive conduct when the actors are doing it on CSI investigation or How to Get Away with Murder or all these other shows recently where I've observed that exact type of conduct where people are touching each other's genitals through their clothes while engaged in a passionate embrace in public. So, you know, we're kind of getting far afield into the speculation here, but if the legislature were to pass that kind of a statute and say, well, we're going to get around this problem by taking my suggestion literally and say, okay, well, the way to get around this is to just criminalize all of this conduct, then you would have a First Amendment problem.
Because that would be protected First Amendment conduct, and therefore they
couldn't search, right? In the context of a film or a play or a TV show, yes. And then, well, you know, how does that comport with due process, where it's okay for two actors to do that, but not two kids in the high school? And then that comes to the intent issue. Well, the actors aren't doing that for the purposes of sexual gratification of each other, I guess, even though sometimes it ends up that way. But the kids in the high school hallway are, and again, that's a problem with the statute. This particular statutory section does not have an element that this conduct must need to be conducted with the intent for sexual gratification. I think the petitioner is trying to say, well, that's kind of necessarily so, because this whole statutory section is directed at sexual conduct in public, but that's not what the statute says. I mean, the legislature made big distinctions between subsection C and subsection
C. Counsel, over here, I'm sorry. You seem to be saying it would be the vagueness problem could be corrected by incorporating some sort of specific intent, you know, with the intent to satisfy the sexual desire of another person. But if that had been formally incorporated into this provision, how does that impact your hypothetical with the high school students? I mean, wouldn't that conduct still qualify?
Well, when two kids are kissing in that manner and they're pressing their crotches against each other, I mean, I think you can infer that that's done for some sort of sexual reason. I mean, they're not talking about a math test by doing that. There's a sexual element to why they're pressing their crotches against each other while kissing.
Right, so I guess I'm just struggling a little bit because you seem to be saying, well, that type of conduct surely cannot be criminal. And then you say, but if we imported this intent requirement into the statute, it would be less vague. And my concern is, or just my question is, if we did that and then applied that to your hypothetical, it seems like it might criminalize that very conduct. By becoming more specific.
What I'm saying is, I think if the legislature amended the statute to include that intent element, then yes, it would cause the conduct of the high school kids to become criminal, and that necessarily wouldn't be unconstitutional, but going down a slippery slope, that's going to cause problems with, well, then how do you tell when that conduct is done for purposes of sexual gratification and not First Amendment expressive conduct, when actors on the stage or in the TV show or in the movie engage in that conduct all the time in our society in this century. So that particular set of facts isn't before the court yet, because the legislature hasn't amended the statute yet.
Let me ask maybe a slightly different question. Given that this subsection D does not include an intent requirement, it doesn't further define lewd, or do you disagree with your opponent that we can or cannot look to other definitions or the other context within the provision as a whole? Do we need to look at it strictly in isolation?
Well, no. You can look at the statute as a whole and the section as a whole, but the problem is that the legislature made a decision in this particular statutory section to not include that when they did so in other statutory sections, which implies that the legislature was making a choice to not include that intent element in this particular statutory subsection. So I don't think that could be read into the statutory subsection without contradicting the legislative intent here. I mean, the legislature is going to have to go back and amend the statute, and if they want to, and amend subsection D to include that intent element.
But you're really asking us to write it for them. I mean, it seems to me. As applied challenge, it seems that this conduct of this particular prosecution, for whatever reason was brought, you know, you can question why it was brought, but it was, seems to fall within commonly understood by the public, and certainly by the persons committing this act or person, that it falls within this definition. It's a lewd finally, isn't it not? I mean, what else is necessary?
Well, I mean, Your Honor, all I can say is look at all of these other states that have been faced with statutes that also use the term lewd, and every single one of them, with the exception of the Utah Supreme Court, has come to the conclusion that that's not enough, that is just too vague, especially in our society. We don't know what lewd means anymore. In 1914, maybe we did, almost. You know, look, exposing your knees could be considered lewd in 1914, but not in 2014.
So, if I may jump in now, Justice Hobbs, you finish?
Okay.
So I get what you're saying is that even if there were reference to intimate parts, that would not be enough to avoid the vagueness problem. It really needs to be some kind of mens rea elements. It has to be intent for sexual arousal, gratification, or abuse, something like that?
Or something else, like indecent exposure. I mean, if
But intimate man, parts would not be sufficient in your estimation.
Not when the clothes are on, because of all of this other, you know, this type of behavior, touching each other's genitals over one's clothing, we see every night on TV during prime time. But before I forget, I would like to also disagree with the district attorney when he states that touching a man's exposed penis in public is always lewd. I don't think that's true, because what about the hypothetical in a public urinal where you've got a man who's a burn victim, or he's injured, or he's paralyzed, and he needs help going to the bathroom. He literally needs the assistance of another man. His penis is going to get touched, and that's a public urinal. That is not lewd. And the reason why it's not lewd is because there's no intent. The intent is to just help the man relieve himself, not for sexual gratification. So you know, these absolutes that the petitioner keeps wanting to graft onto here just aren't true in our society.
Could I ask, we've moved a lot into specific applications, whether specific things would be lewd and fit within the definition, and that's good. But let me turn around. The judge found this statute to be void, to be facially unconstitutional. It's void. It's struck down. Would you agree that could be true for vagueness only if there could be no possible application in which the statute was not vague?
I guess so, but in this case, without a definition that also includes something else, like intent or exposure or abuse, subsection D, as literally written,
that there could be no? I mean, what if you had, I mean, would a case of public copulation fall within this definition and clearly be proscribed by this
provision? I'm having a hard time visualizing public copulation that could possibly occur without the genitals being unclothed. I mean, that's the problem. So when the genitals are unclothed,
But now you're getting down to an application to this particular fact situation or a specific fact situation. And I guess what I'm asking is there an inconsistency between striking down a statute as facially vague and the question whether any particular act could nevertheless be that it could be unconstitutionally applied to a particular act?
Well, if what you're asking is if it's possible for there to be a criminal lewd caress that would fall within this definition, then yes, of course. The problem is we don't know what that is or what the demarcation is between criminal and uncriminal. Does it mean that the genitals have to be unclothed? Does it mean that you have to have a particular intent when touching the unclothed or clothed genitals? Does it matter what the relative age of the people are? Does it matter what the relationship between the two people are? And I'm not sure really that the county court and Judge Murphy really intended. I think that they were trying to strike down the statute as vague or overbroad as applied to these facts, where we have touching over one's clothes in a public place without evidence of more. We don't even have evidence that the other man had an erection. And I mean, that's something that the petitioner kept trying to imply, but that was not in the facts, that was not in the police report, that was not in the stipulation. And therefore, I mean, you know, I think the court can uphold the district court on a more narrow grounds by saying that this statute as applied to these facts was unconstitutionally vague or overbroad given the lack of a definition of lewd, and given the fact that the lack of a definition of lewd did not put Mr. Graves on notice of what was, when his conduct was conduct of touching another man's genitals over his clothes was going to cross over between what we see on TV every night, which is kind of generally accepted to not be criminal, into criminal conduct for which he could be prosecuted. So I think the court's questions address all of the points I want to make. In closing, I would like to urge this court to follow the case law from all the other states that I cited in my brief, Louisiana, Washington, California, Texas, that these type of statutes that have an undefined definition of lewd is susceptible to all of these various interpretations and definitions that we've been discussing is not constitutionally sufficient, because people like Mr. Graves, who are touching another man's crotch area over his clothes, do not know when his conduct crosses over into criminally prescribed conduct versus more innocent conduct, such as the passionate embrace. I mean, I think the breastfeeding analogy is going too far. There's no suggestion ever that the breastfeeding is done for sexual gratification, where touching a man's crotch you know.
You started off your argument by, I think in answer to a question, that this was an adults-only movie theater.
Right.
It would seem that the General Assembly is concerned about this kind of conduct occurring in public where children may be present. So does that suggest anything with respect to the way an opinion might be written on this?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And that goes back to then how the statute is applied to these facts. Given the facts of this case, that children were not present, there's zero evidence that children were present in the theater. There's zero evidence that children were invited to be in this theater or were allowed in this theater.
Well, is there any evidence, some kind of a notice or sign on the outside of the movie theater?
Well, there's no, one of the problems with the record in this case is that there's no evidence either way. We can infer from the fact that this was a pornographic film being shown, clearly an X-rated film, and we all know from personal experience that people under the age of 18 aren't admitted to X-rated films, even with their parent or guardian, that children were not supposed to be present in this theater. So in this type of situation where you have an adults-only place, such as a movie theater, a bar, a place where only adults are allowed to be present, it's different than whether Mr. Graves was stroking the crotch area of another man at the mall or at McDonald's or someplace where he was being observed by children. And how could Mr. Graves know that in that context that his behavior was lewd, given the fact that he was an adults-only theater and there was no overt copulation going on, there was no indecent exposure, you know, nobody's genitals were literally unclothed or being exposed. So that's how this court can then affirm the district court without necessarily striking down the entire statute as being unconstitutionally either vague because of a lack of definition of quote lewd unquote or overbroad. It's overbroad as applied to these facts occurring in a place where children are not allowed to be present. And if there's no further questions from the court, I would respectfully request this court to affirm the district court on that basis. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Munier, you have some time left. Quite a bit of time.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm not sure I agree that the fact that children were not present in this theater is relevant to the vagueness or overbreadth issues. What I think is that if a jury was looking at what was lewd, given the context, that would be more of a factual issue for a fact finder to decide. I don't think that it necessarily means that because children weren't there, there couldn't have been lewd conduct.
Well, what do you want us to say in our opinion? Let's say we agree with you. What do you want us to say?
Well, what I would like this court to do is reverse the finding of the statute. Based on my reading of the lower court's opinion, they did find the statute facially vague and struck the entire statute down.
This is an unpublished opinion.
Correct.
You know, we have to decide whether to write this. How do you want us to write this? The prosecution was brought. You know, you've got a case here that, you know, you're bringing your Colorado Supreme Court. What do you want us to say in public, in this opinion? What should our holding be?
Your holding should be
regarding this act occurring in this theater.
Well, again, if you're reaching the as-applied issue in this case, what I would like the court to say is that this conduct falls within the core of what the statute is meant to prohibit. It's meant to prohibit sexualized behavior like this in public. You don't have to be a child to not want to see a lewd fondle or caress in a public place, regardless of where you are. Now, again, this was a pornographic movie theater.
Well, doesn't that make a difference?
It makes a difference, I believe, Your Honor, again, as a factual issue, whether something was actually lewd. I don't think it makes a difference.
No, I mean in terms of contemporary standards and understanding of what the statute is intending to prescribe. This is a place of entertainment, I think, basically, you've described. I mean, that's what this movie theater is.
Correct.
and it has a certain group of patrons who lawfully can go in there.
Correct.
So is this person really on notice that what happened here is a violation of the criminal law?
Well, my position is, Your Honor, is that of course anyone's free to go into a pornographic movie theater. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're free to expose themselves or rub the genitals of another person that's in that movie theater as well.
Along those lines, there's a pretty good Fourth Circuit case that seems to be pretty much on point that was brought up by the amici. And I think the case is Lanning, I guess it is. Are you familiar with that case?
Somewhat, Your Honor.
Can you tell me, because that seems almost on all fours. And then in that particular case, the court did strike down, I think, the statute. It wasn't a lewdness, but it was a disorderly conduct, so very similar kind of crime, as being unconstitutionally vague as applied. And in that situation, there was a homosexual man engaged in over-the-clothing sexual contact with an undercover officer. Can you help me understand why your case is different than that?
Yes, Your Honor. Here, this court has stated that for a vague as applied test, we're solely looking at whether the conduct alleged falls within the core of what the statute is meant to cover. Now, I understand that in a facial vagueness challenge, we're concerned with whether they may be arbitrary, discriminatory application of a statute. But I don't think that the Fourth Circuit's reasoning in that case is consistent with the test that this court has laid out for as-applied challenges. It seems more like that might be an equal protection issue, that this statute is being applied unconstitutionally in violation of equal protection.
Well, isn't that the thrust of sometimes as-applied vagueness, is that it... And that's, in fact, our concern. The statutes are so vague that, in fact, the decision whether or not to enforce such a statute resides almost entirely within the discretion of a police officer, and therefore is in the probability of being subject to discriminatory enforcement is much, much greater. That's the essence of vagueness as applied, isn't it? And that's why the Fourth Circuit struck down this particular disorderly conduct statute.
And Your Honor, based on my understanding, it's really the facial challenge that's concerned with that, not the as-applied challenge.
Go ahead and tell me what you think this Fourth Circuit case was saying then and what the difference is.
Excuse me? I'm sorry.
Go ahead and tell me what the difference is and how you think the Fourth Circuit was and can be distinguished from our case here. Because it seems factually to be essentially the same situation. An undercover sting, or at least an undercover officer.
Correct.
Same kind of fact pattern, almost exactly.
And again, Your Honor, the only distinguishing, I can't distinguish it on the facts, but again, based on the law this court has set forth, that when we're looking at the as applied rather than facial, we're solely concerned with whether the conduct falls within the core of what the statute's prohibiting. And I would add, Your Honor, that I don't recall, I'm not sure if there was evidence presented in that Fourth Circuit case about whether this statute was being enforced in a discriminatory manner. But here, one instance of bringing a prosecution against someone who is in a homosexual movie theater doesn't necessarily mean the statute is being applied in a discriminatory manner. There was no evidence of that presented below. And for that reason, I do think that's why this case is different.
Okay, thank you.
I would also just like to add, Your Honors, that I believe it was Justice Coates who said that for a facial challenge, it has to be circumstances, no possible application of the statute for it to be facially vague. And I would submit to this court that what we have here is clearly prescribed. Clearly, it is a clear application of the statute, meaning that there is a clear application and it can't be vague on its face. And if there are no further questions, I have nothing to add.
I guess not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I want to thank both counsel for their arguments. Mr. Moyer, Ms. Wettenberg. We appreciate your arguments today. Let's see, I think we're in recess now until 1:30.